This is VOA 1, The Hits.
Hello, and welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ana Mateo. This program is for English learners, so we speak a bit slower. Also, we use words and sentences written for English learners. Here are the stories we have for you on today's program. First, the education report. Today, Dan Friedel will talk about the lessons students may learn from reduced class time. I will return with words and their stories. This week, I talk about the word freeze. We will end the program with The Making of a Nation, our ongoing U.S. history program. But first, the education report.
Most public high school teachers in the United States never expected a school year like the current one. School buildings closed across the country in March of 2020. Education went online, and distance learning has continued since. Teachers around the country quickly found they would not be able to teach as much material as usual to their students. The educators had to make choices about what content to cover and what could be dropped. So, over time, English teachers began cutting some books and writing projects from their teaching plans. History teachers began to shrink their coverage of some periods. Science teachers had to remove experiment-based work because school laboratories were no longer available. While some students were able to keep up with their studies while working from home, many struggled without being at school. In the current school year, many teachers have not even met their students in person. Allison Reeves is a Spanish teacher at a high school in Fairfax, Virginia, about 30 kilometers outside of Washington, D.C. She said, by this time in a school year, she usually knows her students well, but this year is different.
I have gotten a good sense of who they are, but you learn different things virtually. Like, I know their voices when they answer questions, but I don't know what their face looks like per se.
She said distance learning is especially difficult for students in language classes. At the start of a normal school year, she explained, some students can be shy about saying a word incorrectly in front of their friends. But after a while, they understand everyone in the class is learning a new language. At that point, they are not shy anymore. But at home, Reeves said, the students are shyer. They worry about making mistakes in front of their parents. Because of this, Reeves said, she has made speaking less of a priority this year than in past years. She is more centered on helping her students learn to write in Spanish. In addition, she usually has her students learning two different past tenses by now. This year, she has centered more on the present tense. Reeves is not the only teacher changing her teaching plan. Tassie Zahner teaches advanced placement U.S. history at a high school in Silver Spring, Maryland, about 15 kilometers from Washington, D.C. She has been teaching for almost 10 years. At the end of the school year, her students take a national history test. Colleges use the scores to help make admissions decisions. Zahner cut how much time she spends on different parts of American history. For example, she usually spends 18 class periods teaching about the last part of the 19th century. That takes over 3 weeks. This year, she did it in 4 hours. As a result, she thinks some of her students' test scores will not show their true ability. Zahner said the leaders of her school are not that worried about the test scores this year. But her students are.
I have students who want that score on the exam. They do care very much. And not being able to give them the same kind of information and the same rigor that we do in the real classroom has been very difficult for me and for them.
Jake Stanford teaches English at Palm Springs High School in California. He has been teaching for 13 years. His school changed its schedule because of the pandemic. That greatly affected writing projects he would normally give his students. The writing projects require a lot of time. Students write and rewrite a paper several times before they are finished. Stanford said he normally asks students to write 24 papers over the year, but not this year.
It's just not been realistic to try to expect that, and I have not been able to. And I think that's what I'm hearing from colleagues as well.
Stanford said his students will do half the usual number of writing projects. Kristen Espinoza teaches English in Denver, Colorado. She said she had to remove some of her favorite projects from her teaching plan this year. Class time used to be 90 minutes long, she said. Now she sees her students for about 20 minutes each class. Some teachers, however, are also reporting educational successes within the new structure. Jake Stanford said some of his students are performing better than in the past. Due to the coronavirus health crisis, they don't have as many other things going on.
They're absorbing material and gaining a higher level of skill very, very quickly.
Allison Reeves said she hopes colleges will consider the pandemic's effects on high school education when they make admissions decisions. She's hopeful about the future for students overall, even with less teaching time and subject coverage. They are learning how to deal with difficult educational conditions. That, truly, she said, will take you much further than a lot of the content. Tassie Zahner expressed similar thinking.
We have students at my school that are working and helping support their families and taking care of multi-generational households and still showing up every day and going to class and doing their work. That's impressive.
I'm Dan Friedel.
Now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English.
Hello,
In many places around the world, wintertime brings snow, ice, and really cold temperatures. Some places can even experience a deep freeze. But even if you do not live in an area with really low temperatures, you can still use freeze idioms and expressions. For example, you could use them at work. During the coronavirus pandemic, many workplaces have put in place hiring freezes. With a hiring freeze, you are not able to hire more people. The hiring process is not moving. It is frozen. During the pandemic, many businesses and companies also faced financial uncertainties. And some were not sure they would survive. So many places may have put a freeze on wages. When your wages are frozen, they stay at the current level. There is another way we freeze money. If you are having legal or financial trouble, the courts might freeze your bank accounts. When this happens, you cannot use money in a frozen account. Now, freeze is one of those verbs that changes with every preposition you add to it. Let's start with out. It makes the verbal expression freeze out. Sometimes in business dealings, some people or groups may get frozen out by others. If you are frozen out of a business deal, you are not involved. You don't have a seat at the table. If you are a cold, unfeeling person, you may want to isolate someone socially. You don't invite them to parties. You don't tell them about fun events. You are trying to freeze them out of a group. But this seems mean and childish. Freezing people out is something we might have done as children. If you ever have had a friend try to freeze you out of a group, it can hurt, even years later. That memory can be frozen in your mind. It is unchanging and unaffected by the passing of time. Now let's talk about the verbal phrase, freeze up. If something freezes up, it stops working. An engine, for example, can freeze up, meaning it stops running. People can also freeze up. If a person freezes up, they are so afraid or worried, they are unable to speak or move. For example, if I'm afraid of public speaking, I might freeze up while speaking in front of a large group of people. I'm not able to say or do anything. Sometimes we can also just say froze. I was so afraid that I just completely froze. Of course, the word freeze also describes some weather conditions. The verbal freeze over is usually used to describe a body of water. If a lake has frozen over, it is completely frozen. You can safely walk or skate on it. But before we leave freeze over, there is another way we use that expression. For example, if something is never going to happen, like not a chance, I can say when hell freezes over. Hell is supposed to be a hot place. So if it freezes over, you know things are bad. Here is an example.
Hey, Alyssa, I got my boating license yesterday. How about you join me on the river sometime?
Sure, Bradley. when hell freezes over.
Ah, come on. It'll be fun. Why not?
First, I can't swim.
That's okay. You can stay in the boat.
And second, I've seen you drive. There's no way I'm getting in a boat with you.
That's cold, Alyssa. Real cold.
So it's a funny way to say never. We use it jokingly. Personally, I would not use it in any serious situations, such as during a job interview or when meeting someone's parents for the first time. And that's all the time we have for this Words in Their Stories. If you know friends who might like this show, don't freeze them out. Invite them to listen. Until next time, I'm Anna Mateo.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. In recent programs, we talked about how the rise of fascist leaders in Europe threatened American neutrality in the 1930s. Adolf Hitler and the Nazi Party in Germany created the most obvious threat. But there was also Benito Mussolini in Italy and Francisco Franco in Spain. These leaders challenged both the idea of democracy and the security of some of America's closest allies. Hitler's invasion of Poland and the spread of war in Europe in 1939 made Americans wonder if they could remain neutral much longer. The United States would finally go to war against Hitler and the other Axis nations. But its first battle would not be in Europe at all. Instead, the United States would enter World War II following a surprise attack by Japan on the large American naval base at Pearl Harbor, Hawaii. Relations between the United States and Japan had grown steadily worse throughout the 1930s. Both nations were important industrial powers, but they had very different ideas about the economic and political future of East Asia, especially China. Until the late 1800s, Japan had been a nation with ancient political traditions and little contact with the Western world. Visits by Commodore Matthew Perry and American warships helped open Japan to trade with the United States and other nations in the 1850s. And in the years that followed, Japan took major steps toward becoming a modern industrial nation. By the 1920s and 30s, Japan was a strong country, but it lacked oil, rubber, and other natural resources of its own. For this reason, Japanese political leaders looked with envy at the Dutch, French, and British colonies across Southeast Asia and the Pacific. And Japanese business leaders saw huge markets for their products in nearby countries like Korea and China. Japan's desire to use East Asia to gain natural resources and sell manufactured products was in direct conflict with American plans for Asia. This was especially true concerning China. Washington created an open-door policy toward China. It wanted to keep China's natural resources and markets free from control by Japan or any other nation. For this reason, Americans were very concerned when Japanese forces invaded the Manchuria area of China in 1931. And they watched with great interest the efforts of Chinese leader Chiang Kai-shek to oppose the Japanese invaders. The United States was also very concerned about protecting its imports of oil, tin, and rubber from Southeast Asia. This area of the world was a major supplier of these resources in the 1930s. The Middle East had not yet become a leading producer of oil. In these ways, the United States and Japan were competing for the same resources and Asian markets. However, there also was a good deal of trade between the two nations. In fact, Japan depended on the United States for most of its metal, copper, and oil. This trade with Tokyo became a major concern for President Franklin Delano Roosevelt and the Congress in 1937. In the summer of that year, more Japanese troops moved into China. They quickly captured much of the Chinese coast. Much of the metal, oil, and other materials that Japan used for its war effort in China came from the United States. Americans did not like selling Japan materials to use against China, but the trade was legal because of a 1911 agreement between Tokyo and Washington. However, the American government told Japan in 1939 that it would end the earlier agreement. It would no longer sell Japan materials that could be used for war. Washington's decision made the Japanese government think again about its expansionist plans, and the announcement a month later of a non-aggression treaty between Germany and the Soviet Union gave Tokyo even more cause for concern. The Soviet Union could be a major opponent of Japanese expansion in East Asia, and it appeared free from the threat of war in Europe. These two events helped moderates in the Japanese government to gain more influence over foreign policy. A moderate government took power in January 1940. However, this period of moderation in Tokyo did not last long. In the spring of 1940, Germany launched its Blitzkrieg, or lightning invasion of Europe. The Nazis captured Denmark, Norway, the Netherlands, Belgium, Luxembourg, and finally France. Extremists in the Japanese government saw the German victory as their chance to launch their own attack on European colonies in Asia. They quickly began negotiations with Hitler to form a new alliance, and within months, militant leaders overthrew the moderate government in Tokyo. The new Japanese government was headed by a moderate, Prince Konoye, but the Minister of War was an expansionist, General Tojo. Tokyo wasted no time in taking action. It forced France to give Japan permission to occupy northern Indochina. and Tokyo also demanded that Britain close the Burma Road to the Chinese city then known as Chongqing. The Burma Road was a major route by which the United States was supplying China with munitions as part of the Lend-Lease Act. These events caused relations between Tokyo and Washington to become even worse. In the second half of 1940, President Roosevelt banned the export of metal and oil products to Japan. His administration also lent money to China. America began to supply Chiang Kai-shek's government with a fleet of P-40 fighter airplanes with volunteer pilots led by Army aviator Claire Chennault to train Chinese pilots. The squadron became known as the Flying Tigers. American representatives quietly began to meet with British and Dutch officials to discuss joint defense plans for possible Japanese attacks in the Western Pacific. Washington and Tokyo held long negotiations in 1941. The American officials hoped the negotiations might delay Japan from launching an attack to the south. They also thought that a delay might give more moderate leaders in Japan a chance to gain more influence. And, for a time, the American plan worked. Japan did not make new acts of aggression. Again, events in Europe caused this situation to change. Nazi Germany attacked the Soviet Union in the middle of 1941. This prevented Moscow from doing any fighting on its eastern borders, so Japanese troops were free to invade southern Indochina. President Roosevelt reacted to Japan's invasion of Indochina by taking three major steps. First, he took control of all Japanese money in the United States. Second, he brought the armed forces of the Philippines under American command. And third, he closed the Panama Canal to Japanese shipping. Once again, a conflict developed between moderates and extremists in the Japanese government. More moderate leaders, such as Prime Minister Konoye, urged one more effort to reach an agreement with the United States. But the Japanese Army and Navy believed that the time had come to go to war to end American and European power in East Asia forever. Negotiations between Japan and the United States continued through the final months of 1941, but the two nations were on the edge of war. They were as close to hostilities as Washington was with the Nazi government in Berlin. American military officials captured secret messages from Japan during this time. They learned that Tokyo was planning an attack of some kind unless the United States suddenly changed its policies. However, the American officials could not discover exactly where or how the attack would be made. Almost everyone in Washington expected that the Japanese would attack south of Japan. They were wrong. The military leaders in Tokyo were planning a surprise attack on America's main Pacific military base at Pearl Harbor.
And that is our program for today. Thank you for listening. Join us again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Ana Mateo.